Hi, everyone. Welcome to Echo This. And the episode today is about Stand Strong, Conversations on Bullying and Resilience. We are very excited to introduce our panel today, and we are going to dive very deep into a topic of great concern to the world today. So let me first introduce our panel, and we start with Debbie.
Hello, I'm Debbie Wimberly, a medical cannabis educator, consultant, author, speaker, and health quality advocate. My mission is to empower individuals to create an effective compass to guide their health and quality of life.
Lisa?
And I'm Lisa Jones, a speaker, consultant, and author that leverages the power of humor, gamification, and play as fuel to enhance collaboration, increase engagement, and maximize productivity.
And I'm your moderator today, Amy Weishaus, and I'm a lifelong educator and learner with a background in many years in education. And my platform is that all of us have a responsibility, an obligation, and a divine mission to create joy in this world. So unfortunately, there's not a lot of joy surrounding the topic of bullying. And we know in today's world, from the playground to the boardroom, bullying right now is a topic of great concern, unprecedented magnitude, and urgency. There are viral assaults going on as we speak right now on the internet, and there's irreparable damage being done, and sometimes damage too often that is life-threatening. So in this and in future episodes, we have made the commitment that we are going to look into this scourge in our world of bullying, and we are going to try to come up with some insights that will help us attack it and prevent it. And we're also going to share some strategies and some experiences from our own lives. So I want to just add that during the pandemic, not surprisingly, when you would think that there was going to be increased isolation of students, bullying and cyber aggression was at an all-time high. And we found some statistics that harassment had an uptake of 70%. And unfortunately, one group, a national group, the Chinese, who some people thought were responsible for the pandemic, 900% increase in hate speech against that group. So the power, the viral power and the lethal power of the internet as well, when it comes to bullying is huge. But we are going to take a flip side of this, and we're going to look at the usual episodes or segments of our conversation. And we're going to start with echoing the hope. So if community schools, hospitals, athletic organizations, corporations, and in fact, every single human institution is prey to bullying, we have to find ways to confront and to understand its root causes. We can't treat it without understanding the root causes. So we're going to start with our own definitions from our own experiences and reveal some of the realities that contribute to the personality of the bully, and to find what are the influences that encourage them and how can we combat these. So we're going to start with this discussion with Echo the Hope with Lisa.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. Well, I like to think of a bully as someone who's lost their fun map, stomping around like a T-Rex who skipped breakfast, if you will, because bullying really is like a bad game of tag. And we all play that tag game when we litter. Some of us play it when we're an adult, but one person is always it. And the rules keep changing to keep it that way. It's repeated, it's unwanted, and it's aggressive behavior within a power imbalance. And the question to why do people bully? Well, I think a lot of times if you think of bullying as a balloon that's lost its helium. And the first reason I would cite here, Amy, is insecurity, because they feel small inside and they try to make others feel the same way, smaller. And then it's a learned behavior. Sometimes they see bullying at home, they may see it in the media or elsewhere, and then they think it's how they can get noticed. And then the third thing is a need for control. They crave power balance because they feel powerless elsewhere. So a lot of times bullies are, if you think of bullying, bullies like a video game character too, it can be shaped by their environment. If their surroundings, if their reward is aggression or they lack empathy, they're more likely to act out. And I think that by understanding these root causes, what can happen is we can level up our strategies. Schools can teach empathy. Communities can celebrate kindness and workplaces can foster collaboration. So I would say, let's turn bullying into a bad habit where we outgrow and make kindness the coolest game in town.
What a great outlook and vision. And Debbie, what are your thoughts on this?
Going through this conversation we're going through has really taken me to really explore my own experiences and understand what each one of those instances had in common. And I think that it was a lack of me having any control over the situation, over the person. And it's not about being equal, because I can remember in the first grade, I was bullied by one of my classmates. So, he had no control over me. He had no power over me. It was just something that was allowed. Now, that was in the 60s. So back then, we didn't even recognize bullying. And we always told kids, oh, it's just being a kid, get over it. But then when I look at experiences that I've encountered as an adult, it's still the lack of control that I have that I can make a change to this event. So I think that one of the things we really need to find in this hope episode is finding a way that we can help identify that so that we can help give you some tools to possibly be able to have some form of control. And that doesn't mean through violence or anything like that. That's just recognizing what it is, because I feel like bullying from my own personal experience is guided by other factors. And so it could be something that you're experiencing or witnessing at home. It could be something as major as the opiate epidemic and crisis that we've lived through, and how doctors decided they did not want to help patients or felt they couldn't because there was so much targeting of them for prescribing the medications through that process. So it's identifying the factors that are causing the bullying to happen, and then understanding how we can approach those factors and coming up with a good solution.
Well, Debbie, I totally agree with you that we sometimes overlook, we look to the externals like the school or the workplace where the bullying is occurring, but very often we don't stop and look in our own backyard. And you mentioned a difficult situation at home. Well, stressful home life and a lack of empowerment and love at home can lead to a predominance of or predilection towards bullying. There might be aggressive parents at home. There might be aggressive siblings. There might be depression, poor discipline, and poor parenting. So unfortunately, these are issues that are realities. Since bullying comes in all forms, but the one that I think we can sensitize ourselves to as being a root cause is that of verbal bullying, because we may all unknowingly be perpetrators of this. You know, it could be derogatory name calling, nicknamings that hurt, spreading rumors or lying about someone, threatening, yelling, laughing at someone, mocking their tone of voice or their style of speaking, and making insults or making fun of people. So even body language, and you know how, people have all different kinds of body languages, like the most common throwing the finger at someone. I know if someone does that to me, even in the car, you know, an irate driver on the road, I feel very violated and I feel very upset by any kind of verbal assault. So I'm just going to suggest, I found in the literature, and I agree with Debbie, that very often the bully himself is lacking in self-esteem. The bully is lacking and suffering himself. So there are some suggestions to fight bullying by arming yourself with some clever comebacks, especially for kids, to show that they're not weak and they're going to put the bully at bay for a minute, throw them off the balance, And you'd be surprised, but there are hundreds of comebacks on the internet of what anybody could say as a defensive shield. One of them, it could be as innocent as, have you ever tried glue stick instead of chapstick? Or getting more towards a behavioral issue and saying, you know, it's actually pretty easy to be a decent human being. You should try it sometime. You know, a bully is not going to expect that from a weak victim or target. I always learn something from you, like what not to say to people. And these, and so many others of these, even saying something like, I feel you're wasting your time with me because I don't care about you. So you're not bothering me. You need to care about someone for their words to affect you. Things of that nature that actually get to the heart of what the bully is really doing, to look at himself and examine his behavior. Or even, I imagine what your parents would say if they knew you were doing this. So we can fight words. Some people say, no, no, Amy, that's ridiculous, because then the kid is going to escalate it, or the adult is going to escalate it. But it's been found to be the opposite. And of course, sometimes early parent intervention, a phone call to the parents of the person who's bullying a kid at school, can stop it, and it could be pretty controlled at that point. But despite that, we have to arm our students and ourselves to stand confident, stand with self-esteem, and to show they're not a weak target. So I want to now go into, how can we create more opportunities? How can we create more opportunities to equip individuals with these skills, and how to train them not to be a bystander, but to be an upstander, someone who's going to support and put an end to the bullying, and how to do that with empathy and with strength to stop these aggressive behaviors. I know, Lisa, you've got some definite ideas on this, so let's start again with you.
Thanks, Amy. Well, let's do a little role-playing and think of ourselves as an all-star sports team, ready to tackle bullying head-on. So here's how we can train our team. The first step is game awareness. So first, we need to have our team be aware of the game plan. If they're not aware, how can they recognize bullying when it happens? And then schools and communities can run anti-bullying training camps to teach the signs and the importance of speaking up. And that's the first thing. And then the second thing would be empathy coaching. So just like if you think of a good coach that you've had in your lives, we need to understand our teammates' feelings. So you can run empathy drills, just like role-playing and team-building exercises, but they can help us practice seeing things from others' perspectives. And then the third thing, and a really important thing, is to think about a support squad. So we all need a strong support squad. Schools can create buddy benches where kids can find a friend, and then workplaces can have support huddles to foster teamwork and unity. And then we can't forget to do drills. And I like to call them confidence drills, but it can boost our confidence with activities that build self-esteem, like team sports or public speaking. And then feeling strong helps us stand up against bullying. And then we can't do any of the stuff I just mentioned without a playbook, right? So we need an action playbook. We have to have a clear playbook for what to do when bullying is spotted, whether it's reporting it to a coach or teacher or using conflict resolution strategies. Having a plan ensures we're ready to act. And when we train our all-star team with these skills, we can move from being bystanders to MVPs who stop bullying in its tracks. So I say, let's make every school and community a winning team where kindness and strength lead to victory.
Sounds like you've thought a lot about having these game plans and all the possibilities of teamwork and conversation and people getting together for a common cause. Very good basis. Yes. Great overview. And Debbie, what do you want to add to that? I know you also have a lot of experience in the medical field with this issue.
Well, I think we need to understand that bullying happens every single day and every environment. And we actually have lots of opportunity to make change. So there's lots of room to grow here. And so for this answer, I went back and I really started exploring bullying back in the 1960s versus where we are today. And bullying in the 60s was definitely just seen as, oh, that's just being kids. Don't worry about it. I don't know what happened in the adult world because they don't really have any numbers to explain what was happening in the 60s with bullying. But now when we move forward to where we are today, it's still prevalent. It's still happening. So we need to take the opportunity to understand what's really happening. And I think it's by first we need to recognize that it's happening. We need to give people a safe place to talk about this, like Lisa said. But it's also learning to respond to the bully and learning in a safe way to be able to do that. And that comes through training. I could see using actually role-playing or theater or art being something that could be very powerful at explaining this and sharing this with any age and showing you that this can happen. Because even as an adult, no one's ever prepared to be bullied. Nobody ever expects to be bullied. And there are some people that say they still haven't been ever bullied, which is amazing and it's wonderful. So we need to look at those situations as well and try to understand what was the difference. Now, you have to realize lots of times bullying is based on something as the color of your hair. Like I was bullied because I was redhead. So it could be because you wear glasses. But when it's a physical trait, it's something you can't change. So it's really important as adults that we understand this with our children and try to teach them the importance of, you know, understanding how to respond to that. I know with myself, when I was bullied in the first grade and this little kid would push me down on the blacktop every day and say I'd rather be dead than red on the head, and I would cry and go home with skin bloody knees every day. You know, my parents were just talked to, the kids' parents were talked to, but that kid still lived in that class with me every day. So he wasn't removed. I'm not saying they should be removed. That's just being kids. And that didn't, you know, change my life tremendously because I'm here, I'm doing what we do, but I mean, it impacted me. And so that creates a trauma that you have to live with and go through as a kid. And sometimes that still surfaces as an adult, or when you are bullied, it brings you back to that instance because that was the first time I was ever bullied. So I think that we really just need to understand what that experience is and get to know how we can address it, because it's different for everyone. That's the key, is how we perceive bullying. Each one of us is a little bit different than when we say that we were bullied. So the opportunities are here. It's all about education, awareness, and putting all the great tools that Lisa mentioned in play. But it should be happening at every age, every workforce, every event, everything that's happening, because it's not happening today.
Well, I think you said the magic word, education. Education is where it all starts, and often in the most informal ways, that's where it's going to be the most effective. But I strongly believe that the solutions also have to be student-centered and employee-centered if they're going to be effective. And, you know, to that, I saw even United States Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy says that it's building connections. Building connections can boost our optimism and boost our mental health as a nation. And they're the greatest things that we could do is to invest in our relationships. So to combat bullying on that basic level of creating empowering conversations to empower people with those skills, I want to reflect back on the empathy that was created in a small discussion group, a club that the students decided that they needed. It was called Kaleidoscope. And as its name suggests, it was made up of students who were very colorful, and they didn't feel that they really fit into the mainstream sometimes of discussion and values in the high school at large. And we met after school, and we organically came up with topics, no agenda planned, but topics of the moment would come up and we'd never know where it would lead. But they were the most supportive conversations, I believe, that I ever sat and was party to. One time it was about someone being on antidepressants. And then the other one chimed in, oh, really? Which one are you taking? And then the other one said, yeah, I take a little smaller dosage. And before you know it, there was a vital conversation there amongst these teenagers that would not have taken place anywhere else, probably at home or in the classroom. So from the kaleidoscope in a small group, and you know, little groups of women who bowl together, or PTA people, or people who have a common interest in the workplace, whatever it is, can get together and form these little conversation focus groups. On a larger scale, it could be institution-wide. We had a program called Breaking the Barriers, and the students planned the workshops, chose the titles, invited the guests. We had monitoring by the administration on more sensitive topics. But I remember, for example, a wonderful girl who was a little person. You know, she told people in the little seminar on physical appearance and prejudice against people's appearance or stereotypes, physical stature. And she said, it really bothers me when people come up to me in the grocery store and pat me on the head and say, oh, you cute little girl. You know, that's not what you do. I'm just like everybody else. So very poignant, striking moments like this created empathy about being in someone else's shoes. And I believe without empathy, we can't have effective anti-bullying procedures, policies, or salient results, real positive lasting results. We have to give these empathy skills for a lifetime. And that, I think, is where it all starts. So, you know, we're all about empowering conversations. And the next section is echoing the laughter. We always want to look at the bright side of things. So you might say to me, come on, there's nothing happy or bright about bullying. And of course, bullying in itself is horrendous. And we know that in itself, it's an enigma, and it's so complex. So we're going to, though, spin this around a little bit, and possibly from examples in the media or from our own personal experiences, how can we take the harmful effects of bullying, and how can we take that victimization and the echoing of the negative by that chorus that's supporting it, how can we turn that around? And how can we find some kind of joy in the aftermath or in the process of preventing the bullying? So who wants to jump in and start with that?
I can start. So I want to take you back to my fifth grade. And in fifth grade, I was a shy girl, but I was tormented by a bully who loved mocking my Kmart clothes. And I shortly, everyone is probably familiar with Kmart, but I renamed Kmart to Kick Me Again Right There. And I want to preface this with saying that she started verbally abusing me and hitting me when I was in kindergarten. And it took me until I was in fifth grade to fight back. And my mom, who was a hairstylist, had decided that enough was enough. And she trained me in what she called was the art of hairstylist combat. So picture this. If you step into the salon of terror, she'd say, teaching me to mess up a hair and then throw a punch. And after weeks of training, I faced my bully, who I nicknamed Permanent Patty, on the playground. So if you imagine, we have in the corner, we have me, Lisa Longlock's favorite color, blood red, and I used my new skills, and guess what happened? The bullying finally stopped. And the question is, how do we turn harmful laughter into positive vibes? Well, the first thing that I did was empowerment. I think that my mom teaching me empowered me, but we need to teach kids confidence and assertiveness. Maybe not in the hairstylist combat that she taught me, but self-defense and standing tall. And then the next thing we need to do was healthy communication. And this is where role play scenarios come in. We need to make sure we're practicing calm, respectful responses, and kind of think of it like a drama class, but with more kindness. And then, of course, it's really important to celebrate kindness. And we can start by having kindness campaigns, and you can get rewards for acts of kindness. And of course, we have to turn the good deeds into a game that everyone wants to win. And then I already mentioned previously, but buddy systems, if we pair up kids so they always have a friend in their corner, and that would have been something really helpful for me, because if you're being bullied, a lot of times people don't come to your rescue because they don't want to be part of somebody else being bullied. And then the other thing is thinking of role models. You can bring in fun and inspiring figures, and they can share their anti-bullying stories. It's kind of like a superhero team up, but against meanness, right? If you think of that movie, Mean Girls. But focusing on those fun strategies, we can transform our communities. So I say, let's make kindness the coolest trend, just like the neon colors of the 80s. I'm sure we all remember those. They were fun. I'd like to bring them back now too, Amy.
Wow, that sounds so empowering, and it sounds so hopeful that I'm getting ideas right now, and I'm thinking about the guidance counselors who could welcome students coming to them with an open door about bullying and getting a buddy. I love that idea. I really love that idea of getting a buddy and knowing that you have somebody has your back, somebody, there has to be someone in that school who maybe has been bullied, him or herself, and they could, you know, join forces together. And it sounds like such a simple, but such a hugely powerful tool. I really love that. Mm-hmm. And having been in the high school environment for 33 years, you know, I see that working. I definitely see that working. And I see kids from Kaleidoscope being the SWAT team, you know, because they just will identify. I really think that's brilliant. Debbie, how do you process this idea of, you know, finding positive examples and joy and laughter and community in the combat?
I'm going to take this to the adult side now. Lisa's been talking about kind of the kid side of this, and I'm going to take this to the adult side because I think it's really important that we understand that we're looking to work with people regardless of what's happening in life. We want to exist. So let's look at the medical community. And we go to the doctors for advice, support, whatever it may be. But do we ever really think about going to your doctor and then can you be bullied? Yes, you can. And I and not want to pick on anyone particular, but I'm just saying this is something that I don't even know how we address this because we need help from an individual to help us with our health. And then we find ourselves in a situation, and I'll just use an example of my own during the opiate crisis when I was trying to find a doctor to help me when my doctors abandoned me and said they couldn't help me because they were all struggling with being arrested or losing their license for prescribing opiates. And it's something I'd been doing for over 2 decades, and they had been doing it for me. So I didn't ask for it. They prescribed it. But all of a sudden, I found no one would help me. And I can remember I saw multiple doctors. I went to pain clinics trying to get help, and everybody was like, no, we can't help you. Or they had a set of rules that were really stringent. And then I found myself walking into a doctor's office that I thought was going to be receptive to me because I was referred from someone. And he just walked in the door immediately saying, I don't need patients like you. You're a drug seeker. You're a drug addict. And it's like, wait a minute, you don't even know me. And so from that moment on, that conversation began to escalate. And it became very, very stressful for me. But, you know, in the end, he did take me on, but it took me crying a lot and expressing a lot of things. And the thing is then that escalated even further because then it was like, okay, you're required to come in every 2 weeks so I can count your pills. I've never had anyone ask me that. I've worked in the medical field. I've never asked for a prescription early over 2 decades, but now I have to go in and get my pills counted. And then you become where you are actually driving from drugstore to drugstore because a doctor can't call the prescription in. A doctor, you can't, if you leave it with a pharmacy and they didn't have it, you can't get it back and easily take it somewhere else. So you end up tracing around just trying to find this medicine. And then to have the pharmacist say, oh, you need Narcan because you might be a drug addict. When did I become a drug addict? When did that become a classification? Before the opiate crisis, I was a patient in chronic pain that needed help. This is happening a lot around the world. And this is where we need to have partnerships. This is where we need to find a doctor that will partner with us and actually ask them to partner with us and listen to our voices, learn who we are, get to know us. And that's one of the things I said to this doctor is that, you know, you judge me based on some other factors that are not me. Get to know me first. And I can remember walking out of that appointment the very first time and saying to my husband, I'm going to make sure he likes me before this is over. So instead of taking a negative, believe me, I was distraught. I can't even tell you how distraught I was. But bottom line, I walked out of there with a plan that I was going to make sure he understood who I was and respected me. And that's the key, respect. When we're talking about anybody, you have to respect the other person and treat them the way that you would want to be treated. So these are really important things that we need to talk about and share about, because there's somebody else out there that's going through this exact same thing right now, and they don't know that they have options.
Wow, that is so powerful, a testimony. And, you know, there's almost a lot of dark comedy in the scenarios of what you had to struggle through, because if you didn't keep an uplifted attitude, even I'm going to make that guy like me, he's going to see, you know, the human side of my struggle. You know, without that attitude, Debbie, I know you wouldn't have survived. And it's interesting how you took the buddy concept that Lisa saw for the younger people and you up-leveled it to the partnership that we have to have. And I'm sure from our discussion, this doctor, I understand you're still in contact with him, and that this respect and this empathy has grown so that there can be laughter and joy in a conversation like that, where there was only doom and gloom and impossible legal matters facing you of life and death before that. So what a powerful testimony.
Well, Amy, I'd like to jump in with something, because when Debbie was talking and I was thinking of the pharmacy, it's almost like a game. And I've been in that situation too, that you mentioned, Debbie, where like something's called into one pharmacy and then you have to like, so you're like, you're playing a game of like, what pharmacy do I go to next? You're like a ping pong ball. So that's one way to kind of make light of it, make light of a situation that's not fun and frustrating and annoying. And you just want to be like, scream at the pharmacy, but at the same time, like, where am I going next? You know, that's all I wanted to say.
Yes, yes, definitely. And, you know, Debbie alluded earlier to the fact that maybe some of us have escaped bullying. And again, that all goes back to what is our definition of bullying. And the definition and circumstances are as unique as every individual. I'm sure of that. And I was reflecting, and I can't think of any real classic bullying defined instances in my life, but I can think of some that were anti-Semitic and that were verbal and that absolutely astounded me, knocked me for a loop when I was 22, never having experienced that before. So that's a whole other show, but I just want to suggest that sometimes any kind of racial, ethnic, gender kind of bullying or verbal assault can be considered, you know, a form of bullying where it's discriminatory. I'd like to suggest there's such a wealth of resources out there, and I want to just pick up on the media part of it. I found so many children's books on the subjects of bullying and self-esteem, little storybook characters who have courage and confidence to stand up in the face of bullying. And I just want to, for our listeners, say that those resources are out there. And also, movies. What a wonderful way. Watch a movie with your family, something you do all the time, but choose wisely. And if you suspect that there's something being hidden and not shared, maybe there are signs that your child isn't happy to go to school, stomach aches, headaches, don't want to go. Not talking about what's happening in school, nothing good. Coming home very hungry because they didn't go to the cafeteria. No, all kinds of little signs. So maybe watching a movie would be the way to get about it and opening up some conversation. And it's interesting, but in the list of all the movies that could deal with this very, you know, life-threatening subject, The Karate Kid, that was one that was listed. And I didn't remember that as an anti-bullying movie, but apparently that mentorship with the young man in there, The Karate Kid, what a great movie to watch and have it as a springboard for joyful conversation about bullying. And there were others that were mentioned. And I would just suggest there are also testimonies by children who survived bullying. There are TED Talks about bullying. So there's so much out there. It's just that people don't think about those resources and the wealth of information that you can pick and choose and find something perfect for your scout group or your little girls club or bowling league or something. And it's great and it's suitable for parents and children alike to watch. Check your PG-13. I don't know if that even exists anymore today with the content of everything. So crazy. But so I would suggest going to the movies, going to the videos, and just knowing you are not alone. And that's the whole point of, I think, underlying our conversation today. You're not alone. You can't be alone. You mustn't be alone. Any other comments on that? Are we ready? We're going to move on to Echo the Enigma. Okay. So, you know, the natural tendency is to focus on the downside of bullying and its twists and turns and its darkness and its confusion, its puzzling aspects. So bullying is bad from the get-go. We know that. And we don't see many redeeming factors, although we came up with so many about leadership and community and just having a buddy, having someone have your back. So it is an enigma unto itself, granted, but let's pose a reverse kind of perspective. And I'm going to ask the panelists now, how can we turn the enigma around and have some unexpected benefits from the bullying puddle, the muddiness of bullying? So how about Lisa? I saw you shaking your head. So shake us
off. Yeah, I'm all for flipping this enigma on its head, Amy. So turning bullying around can unlock some surprising benefits. And a few benefits that I thought of was, if we face our bully, it can make us stronger. It's kind of like leveling up in a video game. We develop resilience to tackle future challenges. And then we can also experience bullying. It can give us empathy superpowers. So it can help us understand and support others better. And then when we stand up against bullying, it can reveal hidden leadership talents. So kids who speak out can become role models. And then the fourth one is, bullying pushes us to think creatively. So if we're turning challenges into opportunities for innovation, so we're more creative that way. And then if we address bullying, it unites us. It forms teams of kindness crusaders who create safer, more supportive environments. And if we think of bullying like a villain, which it is, we can overcome it and it can lead to growth, strength, and unity. So I would say, Amy, let's turn the dark puzzle of bullying into a story of resilience and empathy.
And I'm all for that. I am on your team 100%. It's like taking it out of the closet.
Yes.
Turning it into something that we shed the light on it. We call it what it is. We say, this is so against the goodness of human nature and why we're all here. And that's the thing. If we don't have a climate in the workplace or in the schools or hospitals that fosters empathy and kindness, we can't have effective education. We can't have effective doctoring or medicine or healing. We cannot have any of that without doing this definite leadership opportunity to overcome bullying hand in hand. I totally agree with you in that beautiful spirit. And Debbie, I know you're on the team too.
Absolutely, I'm on the team, and it all starts with conversation. When we have conversations, it's when we learn. When we have conversations and put aside our prejudice, our bias, whatever it may be, and we allow ourselves to listen to what other people are saying, it gives us the opportunity to grow. It gives us the ability to make change. And this is what I think is such an important piece that's been missing. We talk around bullying a lot, but do we talk with it? Do we actually take it and address what's going on? And I think that it's different for everyone. We've talked about this. Every one of us have different experiences. But I think that when we look at it and understand the factors, I'm going to keep bringing us back to the factors, because factors are what drive that. We don't know what everybody's factors are in their life that cause that to happen. But it's guided by something. I hope I've never bullied anybody. If I have, I apologize and I'm sorry, but I've always tried to live my life that I don't do that. And, you know, I don't know what it is that you could say that could turn someone into a bully, but I also know there's some serious health conditions when we're talking about mental health, because people have dealt with a lot of trauma in their life, or they were born with some mental situations or conditions. And so it becomes important that we understand the factors around it. Doesn't excuse it, doesn't make it right. It just means that we have to understand and identify what they are so that we can really have these conversations. And I think that's one of the places that we really could take this and turn that around.
Thank you so much. Thank you for adding to that conversation, Debbie. And that brings us to our last segment, which is Echo the Transformation. And transformation means change, and that's what we need the dire truths to change the situation. So let's explore now, what are the most critical actions that we have to take to transform the problem of bullying into an uplifting culture of empathy and tolerance and inclusion and respect, all keywords that we've discussed as the through line to today's conversations. So how and where can each one of us make a difference? We have to replace the fear and intimidation, the depression and the tragedy, with optimism and cooperation and with hope. So let's look at what models or what resources are available to help us make this important transformation. Lisa, let's start again with you.
I think that there is definitely a way to turn the school of hard knocks into a school of high fives, if you will. So there are many critical actions that we can make that then cause this transformation. And we've already talked about several of them, but just a reminder is to teach empathy like it's a favorite subject. And that goes back to the role playing of the games and empathy exercises. And that really can help everyone understand each other's feelings. And that's the most important thing here. And then we want to give students a voice by creating leadership programs where they can advocate for respect and inclusion. And then, of course, there's peer-led initiatives that often have the most impact. Because if they're feeling like they're in a leadership role, then they're more apt to be better at kind of combating it. And then, of course, encouraging open conversations about bullying. And that's kind of what Debbie was talking about, and the effects of the conversations. So thinking about those safe spaces that we can have for sharing experiences can help demystify and combat bullying. And we can make a difference everywhere, in schools, at homes, and sports teams, and in the workplace, whether you're a kid or adult. The age does not matter. It's all about modeling respect and inclusion in our daily interactions. So if we think about it that way, and there's a few models and resources I do want to mention here, Amy, and I know that you have some as well. But the first thing is the Second Step program. And this program teaches social emotional learning and empathy. And then there's also a campaign that I found, which is Start With Hello. And that promotes inclusiveness and reduces social isolation. So these are two things. And it all goes back to taking these actions and using these resources that I mentioned. We can replace fear with optimism and intimidation with cooperation. So let's turn every community into a hub of hope and high fives. So I'm going to high five it over to Debbie now.
Beautiful. Debbie, it's yours.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, Amy. I think that for transformation, just I have to go back and look at myself. And I think that's one of the things that we all need to do is do our own search of what we have gone through so that we can understand how to move this forward. But it also means that we have to stand up when we see someone being bullied. We have to be able to at least say to that person, I saw what happened, give them a shoulder to lean on, a voice, because Lisa and you both have said how important it is to have that community or have someone that you can talk to. So conversation is where it all starts, and it starts with you. You're doing your own search within yourself of how you stand on this and how you feel you've handled this throughout your life. And did you learn some lessons that you can send or share with someone else? I also think that, you know, going back to my doctor story, we do have a good relationship now. I built a plan in right away. I didn't wait. I walked out of that office and said, I'm going to make sure he likes me. And he respects me now, and he does like me. And I left him with the image and the thought that, yes, there are people out there that are truly needing medical help. And I made a judgment, and I shouldn't have. And, he hasn't come quite right out and said that he was wrong. But we've had numbers of conversations about it. And he likes me, and he respects me now. So don't think that just having that one simple thought can't change something. Yes, I had to jump through hoops to do that, but that transformation has been huge. And now we have a really good relationship. And we talk, you know, when I see him, we talk, we personally kind of talk. So, you know, I just want you to know that just sometimes the simplest little idea of what you may have that could change something is really important. But I'm going to keep going back to, we need to have partnerships. We need to have connection. That's a lot of what bullying is about, is maybe not feeling like you fit in. So, you know, let's have those conversations so that we can invite other people to be invited in.
Wow. So, such helpful and insightful information. And I just want to add that you could start making a difference by finding out if there are anti-bullying policies in place already in your workplace or in your school. And I want to add that if you just go to the internet, you will find there's a national government bullying, a national bullying prevention center. And you will find also some groups like nonprofits called Great Schools. Find out if your school is a great school. They do a rating of all school districts that apply, I believe. And one of the salient factors in determining the quality of the school is school culture or school climate. And that is one that definitely addresses how well they handle interpersonal relationships like bullying. And that's insightful. I noticed that in California, there are 9 such chapters of great schools. In my home state of New Jersey, which doesn't have a great rating on education nationally, there's only one in New York, but there happen to be 4 in Florida, where I currently live. So it's kind of interesting to see that and find out more about how the Great Schools movement can be fostered, and we could be part of it. So that is as much resources as we have time for today. So we are going to bid you a very empowering farewell for now. And we will be back with more information on this very important topic. In the meantime, we welcome your comments and your feedback. And maybe you'd like to share some experiences that have gone on in your own life and in your own families with the topic of bullying. You can find us on social media at Echo Together, ECHO, the number 2, Together, GETHER, Echo Together, and you can contact us at echotogether@gmail.com. Thank you so much for your listening, and we hope you'll take away something very powerful to make an important difference in the world on this very vital topic of preventing bullying and understanding it better. Thank you again. Bye now.
Echo, echo.
Echo, echo, echo.
Echo, echo.
Echo, echo, echo.
Echo, echo. Listen in for empowering conversations of hope and opportunity.